This is ESPN Radio.
Angola Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chris Canty and Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr., who's off gallivanting in parts of Texas Unknown this weekend ahead of the Dr. Pepper Challenge. All guests appear via the Goodyear headline. And of course, as always, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. Be a part of Canty and Golic Jr. Nation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. Call us at 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. ESPN Nation is presented by Dr. Pepper. College football is heating up, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. And Amber, we do have conference championship weekend in college football, and the College Football Playoff Committee is going to release their final rankings on Sunday. So we want to hear from our listeners. We want to hear from the audience on how you think it's going to play out and who the final four will be. Again, the number for the Dr. Pepper call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. But, Amber, we got to start with Week 13 in the National Football League kicking off last night with the Dallas Cowboys getting a dub over the New Orleans Saints. And it felt like one of those games that Dallas didn't necessarily – it wasn't a must-win game, but it felt like a can't-lose game going up against a team that was shorthanded, no Alvin Kamara, no Teron Armstead, no Ryan Ramczyk, and they were starting Taysom Hill for the first time this season, which essentially is their third-string quarterback for Sean Payton, and he sure did play like it last night.
Yeah, third-string quarterback. Maybe Sean Payton's favorite quarterback, but a third-string quarterback. I think what we learned last night watching that game wasn't necessarily a whole lot about the Dallas Cowboys, because I did learn, I suppose, that they can adjust on the fly, but that's what they were doing, right? Obviously, with McCarthy at home with COVID-19 and then all the adjustments that had to come because of that. You did see Dan Quinn do a good job because it was his defense that was certainly the star of that game. You had, you know, all those interceptions, the takeaways, and of course, you even had a pick six from a D tackle. So you got a little bit of everything from that Cowboys defense last night. I felt confident about that. I still have some questions, though, when it comes to the Dallas Cowboys. I don't know if any of those were answered against the New Orleans Saints. I felt like what last night proved to me, Chris, was that the Saints, they ain't that good. Like, that's what I felt like I knew coming out of that game. I think that we know that Dallas is, you know, going to make the playoffs without much trouble here. But in terms of whether they're going to be that team that is really made up here for a Super Bowl run, I don't feel any more confident answering that question today than I did before that game.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that one, Amber. I mean, I think the two big takeaways from last night's game is that the New Orleans Saints, they're not going anywhere fast. A lot of it has to do with their quarterback situation. Sean Payton just has not been able to figure that out in the post-Drew Brees era of Saints football. So there's still some work to be done on that front because Taysom Hill ain't it. Like, the inaccuracies that we saw, the turnovers that plagued him in the second half, particularly in the fourth quarter, where he threw three interceptions and one that went back to the house. Like, that's unacceptable, especially when you realize that it was a game that would be within reach because they were down 10. So it just felt like it was a little bit too much to ask Taysom Hill to throw them back in the game, and that's requisite for a quarterback in today's NFL. If you don't have that kind of skill set, if you can't throw the football down the field with more accuracy than Taysom displayed last night, then he's probably not going to be your long-term solution at the position. Although I did think that he performed well when they asked him to execute those wildcat situations. I thought that was an element that the Dallas Cowboys defense wasn't ready for, but I think the biggest takeaway coming out of last night's game is that that Dallas Cowboys offense still ain't fixed. They still got some problems on that side of the ball, Amber. I mean, just the lack of consistency when it comes to running the football and the lack of productivity from Ezekiel Elliott, those are things that make you raise an eyebrow, because you got to think, if the Dallas Cowboys are going to get where they want to go, number 21 is going to have to be a big part of that, and that offensive line is going to have to be able to sustain blocks and create more movement at the point of attack. And there were just not yards to be had for the most part outside of that Tony Pollard 70-yard touchdown run. There really wasn't a whole lot of consistency in that run game. So I know the final numbers will look gaudy. They'll look impressive, because the Cowboys rushed the ball 24 times for 146 yards. But when you peel back the layers and you look at the Cowboys rushing in the fourth quarter where they had a double-digit lead, those are the times where you want to be able to run the football. And the Cowboys ran it 11 times for a whopping 32 yards. That's not going to be good enough. If you're going to be a team that's going to be able to close out playoff caliber teams, close out some of the best teams in the NFL, you've got to be able to run the football when they know you're going to run the football. You've got to be able to go into your four-minute offense and take care of business. And last night, the Dallas Cowboys defense upheld their end of the bargain by being able to force those three turnovers and a three and out in the fourth quarter. But then the Dallas Cowboys offense returned the favor by throwing an interception after three plays, going three and out and going three and out. That's not what you're looking for. You've got to find a way to be able to sustain drives, to possess the ball, and to keep the clock running in order to make sure that you can win those types of football games. So I think there's still a lot of work to be done. But the upside of the Cowboys offense, I think we saw that in the second series of that game, Amber. You saw it when Amari Cooper caught that 41-yard pass. You saw it with the smoke screen to CeeDee Lamb that went for 33 yards, and then that drive capped by Michael Gallup with the toe tap in the back corner of the end zone. Like, at their best, that's what the Dallas Cowboys offense can be. That's how explosive they can be, because you probably got the best wide receiver trio in the National Football League. I mean, even lumping in that group that's down there in Tampa with the head case that is Antonio Brown, I would probably still lean toward the Dallas Cowboys having the top receiver trio in the National Football League. So if you have your run game going and you have those explosive elements in the passing game with the healthy Dak Prescott, I think you saw a glimpse of what that offense could potentially be. But the inconsistency is where I'm worried about the Cowboys in terms of them ultimately getting where they want to go, which is competing for a Super Bowl title.
Yeah, you absolutely saw what it can be like when those guys are all clicking and all on the right page. And let's not forget, they just got back Cooper and Lamb. So in fairness to the Cowboys, they didn't have to run all over the Saints last night. Like, that would be, I guess, the argument you could make if you're the Cowboys. They didn't need it. I do agree with you, though, when it comes to particularly Zeke. Like, there is a real problem there. And you could see it on the sidelines last night. I mean, he appeared to be limping. He appeared to be grimacing. He had 13 carries for just 45 yards. It is obvious that that knee is still bothering him. He has not been the same player since, what is it, week five now, that we'd have to go back to. And this has continued to be a problem. Should the Dallas Cowboys, Chris, be resting Ezekiel Elliott at this point? Because it's very difficult to do that when you're trying to make the playoffs.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult for them to do that. But I will say this, they got 10 days until they play their next game, and they're coming out of a stretch where they had three games in 12 days. So if they're going to rest him, this would be the spot to do it. And if he needs more rest, then I think you do consider putting him on IR and shutting him down for 3 weeks and seeing what you can get out of him in week 17 and week 18 on your way on into the playoffs. So we'll see what Mike McCarthy and that coaching staff and the medical staff decide to do with Zeke. But there is a real problem there. And I also think there's a real argument to be had about why Tony Pollard isn't getting more touches, because he had twice the productivity and half the touches that Zeke did last night. I'm just saying, Amber, without saying. But we'll get back to that game in a little while. We got my former teammate, Dallas Cowboys, and ESPN analyst, or co-host on NFL Live, Marcus Spears, coming through a little bit later on to talk Thursday night football and to help us preview the Week 13 slate. But Amber, we got to get into the Giants and the Dolphins, and we're going to do that after this word from Capital One. Everyone likes shopping online, but searching for coupon codes kind of sucks. So make saving online a breeze with Capital One Shopping. Capital One Shopping is a free tool that instantly searches for available coupon codes and automatically applies them at checkout. Just download Capital One Shopping to your computer and let it do the work for you. So easy, and you don't even need a Capital One card to use it. Capital One Shopping, it's kind of genius. What's in your wallet? Savings and available coupons may vary. Canny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chris Canny and Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. And Amber, we got my New York Football Giants paying your Miami Dolphins a visit this weekend, and we got word this afternoon that the Giants starting quarterback Daniel Jones is a no-go. Now, we know he's been dealing with a neck injury coming out of last week's game against the Philadelphia Eagles. He injured it early in that game but didn't feel the symptoms until afterward. He practiced on a limited basis this week, and so the Giants were holding out hope that he could potentially be available for this game, but the Giants ruled him out today, and they announced that Mike Glennon is going to be the starting quarterback. This is the very same Mike Glennon that hasn't won an NFL game in a start since 2017 and is 0-5 since. So it feels like things are favoring the Miami Dolphins when it comes to this particular matchup. I know the Dolphins were laying 4 points as of yesterday, and that number has since jumped up to 5.5. So it feels like everything is coming up Dolphins with this particular matchup, and this is one of the teams that's streaking in the NFL. So from your perspective, this game for the Miami Dolphins, this should be, you know, take care of your business, not must win but can't lose.
I love when we say that they're streaking, and then of course you look at the record and they're 5-7. Like, they are streaking because they started out 1-7 for the Miami Dolphins, and you're right, they are on a streak here. They're still only sitting at 5-7, but it does feel like the Dolphins defense will be up to the Mike Glennon task. The Mike Glennon show is not the show that anybody in New York wants to see. I don't know if they want to see the Daniel Jones show anymore, but Chris, I think that we found the guy whose show that they want to see even less in New York than the Daniel Jones show right now. And he was not good in week 5 when he came in for Jones against the Cowboys, when Jones had to leave that game. He was 16 of 25, 196 yards, a touchdown, 2 interceptions. And now he faces a Dolphins defense that is not only rolling here, but a very blitz happy defense. This game opened, I think, at 2.5, and now it's up to 5. So that's how much it has changed just based on the absence of Daniel Jones. And yeah, this is a huge loss for the Giants, of course, losing the starting quarterback. It's also a huge loss for Jones because, Chris, this just feels like to me another setback in the Daniel Jones saga. We're talking about a quarterback that we really needed to see a leap from this year to feel confident about his future here in the NFL. And not that the injury is his fault. He's dealing with a neck injury, fine, but it just feels like another thing and now less games to evaluate him moving forward.
Yeah, and that's the big question mark around Daniel Jones, is whether or not he's the long-term franchise guy. And the Giants are going to be in a spot where they've got to make a decision on his fifth-year option this offseason. And, Amber, I think you touched on something that not a lot of people realize. Beyond just the turnover concerns for Daniel Jones, you actually have to worry about the health concerns too, because this is the third straight season where you're talking about him missing time for an injury. Now, in his first season, he missed a couple of games because of a high ankle sprain. Last year was the hamstring in the second half of this season. Now we're talking about a neck injury that's going to keep him out who knows how long. So there are some questions about his, you know, long-term, you know, ability to stay healthy. And as Herm Edwards once upon a time said, the best ability is availability. So that has to be weighed in with all the other factors in deciding his future. Not to mention, you're talking about a quarterback that only has 2 more total touchdowns than he does total turnovers. So, again, when we're asking the question about how much should the Giants commit to Daniel Jones, I think all of these things have to be weighed. And on the flip side of this coin, in looking at the other team in this matchup, we know the conversations around Tua. And although I will say Tua the last few weeks has been trending in the right direction, the conversation around whether or not the Dolphins are going to go after Deshaun Watson is not going away this coming offseason. So the question that I'll throw out to you, because you're closer than this than most people are, and you have a real good feel for the lay of the land down in South Florida, is can Tua show enough win the remaining games in order to convince the Dolphins that they should pass on the opportunity to pursue Deshaun Watson and use that draft capital to continue to build out this roster? What do you think the feel around the organization is? Where do you think they're leaning right now? And to the question, can Tua actually show enough to convince them that they should pass on the opportunity of Deshaun Watson?
Well, you just mentioned with Daniel Jones, you're concerned about his injury history. You could certainly say the same exact thing about Tua. And it's not just about availability, of course. It's also with these quarterbacks, these young quarterbacks that you're trying to evaluate and you're trying to figure out. And then when they aren't available to you, not only, of course, do they hurt your team because they're not available, but now they aren't available to be evaluated in a real game time type situation. So that has certainly harmed Tua's career here in the NFL thus far, in addition to all the other stuff that's happened there with them finding themselves in the unusual situation of trying to make the playoffs at the end of last season. So they bench him for Ryan Fitzpatrick and that whole situation that we know that went down last season. So with Tua, he's certainly trending the right direction. I think that people are slow to give Tua the respect that maybe he even deserves at this point. We finally got past all those trade rumors once the trade deadline passed, and it has been the Tua show since then. So maybe he actually was somewhat affected, as probably any of us would be, by all of those rumors that were out there circulating. The problem is, Chris, that we're talking about Deshaun Watson. Like, if you and I were just having a conversation about the future of Tua as the Dolphins quarterback, and there was nobody named Deshaun out there. So we're having this conversation in terms of, you know, could the Dolphins make a move for, you know, like a Daniel Jones type, you know, some of these other quarterbacks that have question marks that, you know, we know teams are probably going to, you know, maybe give opportunities to down the road, or addressing the situation in the draft. If we were having that conversation, I'd say, you know what, Tua absolutely can show enough. The problem is the guy who we're having that conversation about is, you know, a top five quarterback in the NFL. Like, no, there's nothing Tua can do here over these next games that is going to convince us he's better than Deshaun Watson. I don't even know if that's fair. Like, there's also nothing that he can do here that's going to convince me he's better than, you know, Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes. Like, there's a list of quarterbacks, of course, that are elite quarterbacks. And Deshaun Watson falls somewhere on the elite quarterback list. Now, if you want to have a conversation about whether it's a good business move, obviously there's the situation around Deshaun Watson in terms of the legal woes, but I'm talking as well about the fact that you have two on a rookie contract. You'd obviously have to trade for Deshaun. You obviously would have to give up significant draft capital in order to do that. Can Tua show enough to make them not want to pay the price of a Deshaun Watson? Now I think that's a viable conversation. And it's gotten interesting of late. I don't know if people realize how well Tua has played. It has certainly been an eye-opener, I think, these last few games. The problem is it's been a few games. And they started out 1-7 this season. And again, if we're comparing, like, what would that have looked like with Deshaun Watson under center?
Yeah, that's the thing. And we'll never know the answer to that because that's a hypothetical. But like you said, the last three games for Tua, 100-plus passer rating in each of them, three touchdowns to only one interception. So certainly feels like the Dolphins have something that they can hang their hat on. It'll be interesting to see which quarterback in this potential matchup, whether it's Daniel Jones or Tua Tagovailoa, will end up being the starter for their team going into the 2020 season. I think that's a legitimate conversation to be had, and ultimately one that the general managers are going to have to answer. But I feel like there are more questions about the Giants and who's the actual general manager will be than we do have down in South Florida with the Miami Dolphins.
I think there's some questions there with Chris Greer still, though. You know,
really?
I think that there's some questions on both fronts. Really? I do think, don't get me wrong, I think that the way that things have turned around this season certainly bodes well for Flores and for Greer. But there were certainly a lot of rumblings early on in the season. And people are really, really into Brian Flores. So if somebody's going to take the fall, it's probably not going to be Flo. Greer's been with the organization for a lot longer and a lot longer in terms of losing seasons as well.
So let me ask you this question really quickly, Amber, because we're up against a break. Who's this game more important for? Is it more important for the Dolphins or more important for the Giants?
Well, I think it's more important for the Dolphins because I think they're the team that, frankly, like you said, they're on a streak here. People are buying back into that defense, buying back into what Brian Flores can do. People were really, really high on Brian Flores. And then in the first half of the season, it started feeling like, oh, he was going to be another Bill Belichick disciple that doesn't pan out as a head coach in the NFL. And certainly he has kind of quieted those rumblings. And I think people in Miami want those rumblings to be quieted because they want to root for Brian Flores. He's very, very well liked in Miami. I would say that them being able to continue this trajectory, obviously, you know, technically they're like in the playoff hunt. I think they've got like a 9% chance at this point of making the playoffs. When you start 1-7, it's very, very difficult on an expanded season like we're in now. There's always a chance, I guess, but that's not the goal. Now the goal, I think, is just to change the narrative, and the Dolphins have to keep winning in order for that to happen. I feel like in New York, it's not as important because, frankly, that situation's already a dumpster fire, right? Like, is there anything, if the Giants beat the Dolphins, does it help anybody's job security in New York?
Maybe it helps Joe Judge, but if you're going to be in the hunt for a new general manager, you would think that you would allow that general manager to pick his head coach. So we'll ultimately end up seeing how things go. I will say this, though, with the Miami Dolphins, the remaining schedule leaves a lot of opportunity for them to finish strong. Their next three games, they've got the Giants, of course, this Sunday, the New York Jets, and the New Orleans Saints, and we know how the Saints are trending. So there seems like there'll be opportunities for them to at least make the case that they deserve to come back and be a hierarchy for the Dolphins in 2022. But coming up, we'll tell you about the hierarchy at Notre Dame. Now that they've nabbed their guy and head coach Marcus Freeman, we'll tell you what his top priority should be. This is Chris Canty and Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. on Canty and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio and ESPN+.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny Angola Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chris Canty and Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And Amber, it's time for some Straight Talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. We have head coach Marcus Freeman at Notre Dame being introduced today, and it sounds good to say that because he's the guy that a lot of people that are close to the program, including our very own Mike Golic Jr., wanted to see get an opportunity to take over this job. So we have some sound from Marcus Freeman being introduced for the first time as Notre Dame's head coach.
You understand? We got great leaders in this room, okay? And when you want something done, you get it done. That's on the football field, that's off the football field, that's in leadership, that's in everything we do. When you guys want something done and you come together and you say, I'm going to get something done, we get it done, right? So the same thing's going to happen as we move forward, right? Things aren't changing, man. We're going to enhance what we do, but things aren't changing. We're going to lead, we're going to lean on our leadership. And you leaders know who you are, right? We're going to lean on you because what you guys want to get done is going to get done, all right? And we're going to set high expectations. And we're going to do everything in our power to make sure we equipped ourselves to reach that. And then the next mission is going to occur. 48 hours. I don't care who we play. Okay? I don't care who the opponent is. In 48 hours, right, we're going to get together and we're going to get going for this mission. Everybody, we owe it to the Seahawks. This isn't about the future. Let's be clear. That's a disservice to this group. This isn't about the future. This isn't about next year. This ain't about 5 years from now. It's about right now.
And that was the Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. That was the voice of head strength coach Matt Bayless about to introduce Marcus Freeman to the team in the locker room. And Amber, I got to say, Notre Dame posted this on their Twitter account and all their social media. And just to see the reaction from the players in that locker room, it was clear that this is the guy that they wanted to see get an opportunity to be their next head coach.
Yeah, the players are thrilled. It's very obvious that the school prioritizes business as usual, right? And the best way to do that is to keep it all in-house and keep it moving as you have been doing. And Notre Dame is on a run of 5 consecutive double-digit victory seasons. They are always in the national conversation, even if there are seasons where maybe we don't feel like they deserve to be there as much or they're just getting bounced in the first round of the playoffs. But they're always in the mix, Chris. And that's what's important here for Notre Dame is why disrupt that when you have that sort of continuity. And it's obvious that the administration felt like they didn't need to go outside the program to find a hot young coach that is going to be able to take over the helm because they felt like they had one in-house. The game becomes for Notre Dame because, listen, there's only so many huge names to go around. Notre Dame's a little late to the party because obviously they didn't know Kelly was going to leave. Mm-hmm. So LSU goes after a big name. USC goes after a big name. Not everybody can go after big names. There's only so many big names that are going to be available. So then the game becomes, do you go outside to get, you know, an up-and-coming coach? Or, hey, if you think you have one on your staff, why don't we just go ahead and elevate this guy? And then what that does for us is that maintains the structure and also maybe encourages kids to stay. Because the world that we live in now, Chris, of course, kids can leave if they want to leave. So now you're not only worried about recruiting, but you're kind of worried about recruiting in-house with your own team as it's currently constructed when you have a coach leave. And the best way I would imagine to talk a lot of those players into staying in your key pieces is to elevate the guy who is already their leader and who they already believe in.
Yeah, absolutely. Continuity is what Notre Dame chose because they're in the midst of their longest double-digit win streak in program history. So it just seems like it made sense to stay the course. And the risk that you have with turning it over to somebody that's never done the job, that's never worn the hat of head coach, is you worry about the infrastructure and them being able to put that in place and to help set the culture. But because you've had so many successful years with Brian Kelly and then you introduce Marcus Freeman into that, it just feels like the guardrails are there for Marcus Freeman in order to implement his strategies and his systems and at the same time being able to maintain good relationships with the players to keep guys out of the transfer portal and to keep the recruiting classes that they've worked so hard for over the next couple of years intact. Right now, Notre Dame has the 5th-ranked recruiting class for 2022, and the one that they have in 2023 is ranked 2nd. As of now. So I got to imagine because Marcus Freeman is the head recruiter for the program, that had to weigh into Jack Swarbrick's formula or math when he came to making the decision on who their next head coach would be. So I think this is a tremendous win. This is somebody that's already shown that he understands the area and being able to recruit that footprint. He played at Ohio State. He was a coach at Kent State and Purdue before he got to Cincinnati with Luke Fickle, and he spent four seasons there. So it seems like it all fits in terms of being able to get somebody that can recruit the area and then have good relationships with the players to get the most out of their people. So I'm really excited about it. I think this was a home run hire for Notre Dame. And although he doesn't necessarily have the resume, Coach Freeman, I think the reaction that you got from everybody within the organization with strength coach Matt Bayless and with offensive coordinator Tommy Rees, all of those deciding to stay on, recruiting coordinator Mike Elston, like all of these people deciding to stay, I think that shows that there's a commitment to this school, there's a commitment to what they've built, and there's a belief that Marcus Freeman can pick up where Brian Kelly left off. So, I got to say, for short notice and knowing that, you know, not having a head coach could potentially go against them in the College Football Playoff Selection Committee's math when they're determining the final field, I got to say this was quick work by Jack Swarbrick in making a really good decision for the program, both in the short term and in the long term.
Yeah, I think he said it was going to be an extensive search, right? And it doesn't seem like he had to search very extensively for his next head coach. I guess if there's any criticism to be had of this hiring, it would be that, you know, Freeman wasn't with Notre Dame very long at all. So I don't know if that raises any eyebrows, but obviously hugely successful as the D coordinator at Cincinnati and certainly has helped them get to where they are. And then the other knock, maybe his age. I have heard that here since this news broke. And over the last few days when there was this rumbling of this news that was coming, he's only 35 years old. I do think people forget, though, that like when you're 20, 35 sounds like 75 sounds like to me and you, Chris, right? Like 35 sounds so old. I mean, I think that the people that are talking about how young he is, they're all over the age of 35 and they're recognizing that 35 is young. But I assure you, these college kids are not recognizing how young 35 is. So he'll be just fine. It's not like he's the CEO of a company and everybody else in that company 60. And so there could be some leadership issues there. He's already been a leader of these kids. And then also they are kids compared to him. So he won't have any problem leading at the helm, even if the rest of us recognize him as a young coach.
Yeah, he's not that far removed from actually being a player himself in the Big Ten. So I think that's actually a strength and not a weakness, but that's just the way that I see it, Amber. Bowl season is looming. Tune in tomorrow for the Big 12 championship game presented by Dr. Pepper. Coverage begins at 11 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Coming up next, we got the Grizzlies and setting an NBA record after beating OKC by 73 points. I'll share the worst loss I ever suffered as a pro. Turns out it was a win after all. You're listening to Canty and Golic Jr. Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Tonight in Memphis, going to be 152-79. If you tuned in, you have heard an NBA record for margin of victory, a Grizzlies franchise record for points scored in a single game.
That sound courtesy of 92.9 ESPN as the Grizzlies defeat the Oklahoma City Thunder 152-79 and in the process set an NBA record for margin of victory. This is Canty and Golic Jr., Chris Canty and Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. With insurance for cars, homes, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles, get at Progressive, 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and Progressive.com. And Amber, this is a beatdown of epic proportions. The 73-point margin of victory topped the previous record set by Cleveland, which was 68 points in a win over Miami.
Yeah,
and that was December 17th in 1991. So this is a record that has stood for 30 years.
Yeah.
And the Memphis Grizzlies blew it out of the water against the Oklahoma City Thunder.
You know, I hosted a sports radio show in Miami for a very, very long time. And anytime somebody would get close, we'd be rooting for this. We're like the 72 Dolphins, but opposite. Like, we want somebody to break the record because that Cavs victory since 1991 has been a thorn in our side. You mentioned for the last three decades, finally, the Memphis Grizzlies did it. Now, in fairness, the Oklahoma City Thunder was missing seven players, I think, last night, including Gilgeous Alexander. So they were missing, obviously, very key pieces. I don't believe that 91 Miami Heat team was actually missing players or key pieces. Nevertheless, the spell has been broken, or the curse, I guess, has been broken, and now an NBA title belongs to somebody else, a title they never, ever wanted. Now it belongs to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Enjoy the next three decades.
Yeah, that's all bad business for Oklahoma City, and I get it. They were missing SGA and a bunch of other guys, but it's not like Memphis had Ja Morant. He's been out a couple of weeks with injury, so I still think that when you have a team, there are other NBA players on the Oklahoma City Thunder that are cashing checks, and there's no way that you should allow 9 of the 12 players that suited up for the Grizzlies to reach double figures in scoring. I mean,
that's just
unacceptable.
There's no excuse for any of this. So what's your excuse? I want to know, in your playing career, what was the worst loss you ever suffered and why?
Okay, so this is going to go back a ways. This is going back to 2008, and it was the regular season finale when I was with the Dallas Cowboys. We had already been eliminated for playoff contention, so this was all about trying to get to the offseason healthy. And what made this important for me was because I was an impending free agent after this game. So, you know, we wanted to go into the game and, you know, be competitive, not get embarrassed, but ultimately – the Philadelphia Eagles took us to task in Lincoln Financial Field, and they beat us like a drum to the tune of 44-6, Amber. That's how bad it was. It was all-time bad. But for me, because I was a free agent, once I saw this game going sideways on us in the third quarter, I looked over at my backup, Stephen Bowen, and I said, "All right, you're up," and left him in the game for the rest of the game. And I was just like, "I feel bad for you, but I'm not going in and risking getting hurt, because I know I'm about to be a free agent and get that bag." So there was no way I was going back in that game. So the fact is that it was a blowout, but it ended up working out in my favor because I was ultimately able to get to free agency and I signed with the Giants and they gave me a very lucrative contract. But I remember coming to the sideline that last time in the third quarter, at the end of the third quarter, and I saw my dad sitting behind the bench, Amber, and he was chanting, "Fly, Eagles, fly," dressed in his Dallas Cowboys gear with his Chris Candy 99 jersey
on. No.
And I'm just sitting looking at my dad like, "What are you doing? Like, I understand why you're excited, and I'm thinking the same thing you're thinking, but everybody else can see you, so you can't do that." So that's exactly what my dad was doing. He was singing that very song, and I was just like, "Pops, you cannot do that. All the guys that are on my team see you doing that, and they know why you're doing it. Like, we at least got to try to be subtle a little bit about it." So my worst loss in my NFL career ended up having a little bit of a silver lining. I don't know that anybody on that OKC team can actually make that claim after getting blasted by the Grizzlies.
No, I don't know if there's a silver lining. I guess the difference would be, like I said, because they were missing so many of their guys, and obviously it's just one of many regular season NBA games where, for your team, a little bit different, though. You guys were already out of playoff contention. I understand wanting to save yourself at that point. You did the right thing. I don't know how your backup felt about that move. I mean, maybe it's good for him because, like, maybe
he's
going to
get some tape, Amber.
He wants the opportunity, right? So he wants the opportunity.
More playing time, so he was getting tape, right?
Although I don't know if you want the opportunity to shine in that moment, you know?
At least if you make a play in that moment, you know you can't celebrate. Like, there's no way you can celebrate if your team is down by 38 points. That's just a bad look all the way around. There's no way that you can go for that.
I don't know if that helped that man's tape. But I understand.
No, it didn't help. But he eventually got the bag, too, just a couple of seasons later. So I don't think Stephen Bowen is going to hold that against me. Stephen Bowen now working in the league office, but that's neither here nor there. But what we do want you guys to chime in on is our Twitter poll. This is on the ESPN Radio Twitter account. This is the Canty and Golic Jr. Weekend Preview Poll. And our question to our listeners is, of the following, which team is likely to make it to the – least likely to make it to the college football playoff? We got Georgia, Michigan, Alabama, and Cincinnati. But coming up next, though, we'll get into the matchup in Week 13, Bengals-Chargers. We'll see what happens. Two quarterbacks shooting it out. This is Canty and Golic Jr.